Shalom Aleichem, everyone. This is a recording for anybody who was interested in participating in the Zoom Shiur on Sunday and was not able to. We're going to do, I think this time, in two parts. On the Zoom Shiur, we're starting to get late, so the second part I did a little short. So I suspect we'll see how we go now, but I'm going to make it into two parts. Part number one would be now. And then if I'm able to tomorrow, I'll do part two. If I'm not able to tomorrow, so B'zot Hashem over Chol HaMoed, I'll send out part two. Okay? Okay, let's start without too many introductions. Famous Gemara appears a few times in Shas and in Masechet Pesachim. Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag. Dorshim B'Hilchot HaChag. 30 days before the Chag, you're supposed to start darshaning the halachot of Chag. Now, there's a machloket Rishonim whether that pertains to Pesach specifically, as some Rishonim hold Pesach, as we know, has so many details, so many halachic details, so many questions that Rabbanim, Poskim, Moreh Ora'ah receive over the generations around these days. Therefore, 30 days before the Chag, Dorshin B'Hilchot HaChag. There's another machloket, whether or not it means that Rabbanim need to actually stand 30 days before Pesach and start giving Hilchos Pesach over, or does it mean only that they have to go over the halachos themselves, that they're refreshed in their mind in a way that when they're asked questions that they have answer, their answers available. And that they know their Hilchot Pesach material. But in any case, Lekuli Alma, we're talking about Pesach, and as I said before, there's another Machloket Rishonim, whether it pertains to all Chagim. Especially if you take the other opinion, that is, that it's not only Pesach, rather it's all Moedim. 30 days before the Moed, you start learning the Halachot of the Moed, or you start teaching them over. That suggests already a somewhat of a more profound approach, and I've seen that spoken about. I've mentioned it in the past here, that seems to be suggesting that there is a root or an origin or a beginning of the entering of the any given moed into our world of time, into our world of Olam Hazeh. It takes 30 days for the Moed to come into existence or to be born, and the 30 days date prior to that given Moed is the beginning of the revelation of that Moed. However, we understand it, and obviously, if it's on that more profound level, that's a lot of deep thought. But Le'inyaneinu, being that Lekuli Alma, we're talking about Pesach, begins 30 days before Pesach. Halachically. So then, of course, it's fascinating, as Avi Hoffman pointed out during the live shiur on Zoom. He immediately pointed that out, and it's a very valid point, which is why we're bringing it in the first place. And that is that the 30 days before the Chag of Pesach is Purim, which means whether you're in a state of Adelo Yada or in a state of Yada, you're supposed to be start learning. Or darshaning Hilchot Pesach on what during the Seudat Purim itself, it's absolutely fascinating. Of course, the events of Purim, we know the events, the centerpiece events of the whole turning over of the story and the Mishta of Esther. By Achashverosh and the downfall of Haman all takes place over the course of the days of Pesach, which pull the strings of the following Purim. But and yet, as Avi Hoffman pointed out, I think maybe it was this point, that is that when Esther actually says to Mordechai in response, "How can I go in? How can I go in on Pesach?" But I was not called in for 30 days. That means the date of Purim. So there's a lot of mysterious things going on over there. We're not going to try to attempt and understand it all now. But all I'm trying to bring up is the following fascinating question: and who comes first, Purim comes first or Pesach comes first? What do we mean? Now, of course, chronologically speaking, in terms of historical events, of course, Pesach comes first. That's the first moed. That's so much of what this moed is about. It's the first month, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim, Rishonu Lachem LeChodshei HaShana, which appears already, and we make reference to it, and we read it in Parshat HaChodesh 2 weeks before every year before Pesach, as it happened the first year. We receive the first mitzvah, which defines Jewish time prior, 2 weeks before actually Yetziat Mitzrayim itself. But and as a result, as the Mishnah Masechet Rosh Hashanah points out, and that is Nisan is Rosh Hashanah le'Regalim, and that is it's the first moed, it's the first month, and it's the Pesach. Nisan is the first month. Pesach, therefore, of course, is the first moed out of which the entire Jewish cycle unfolds, starting from Nisan, going to Nisan, being again that the biblical definition is of Chodesh Nisan is a Chodesh HaRishon. As a name, Chodesh Nisan, which is an interesting name in its own, right? And obviously it seems to have like a Nisim miracle connotation to the name, but that's a name that comes forth later on in our sources, as we know that the names of the Chodeshim come up with us from Bavel, and that's a separate discussion in our discussion tonight. But in any case, so all this leads to the question, as I said, what comes first, Purim or Pesach? So chronologically, historically, Pesach comes way before Purim. And yet, Shloshim Yom Kodem Pesach, already there is a beginning of Pesach on Purim, which precedes it, is already suggesting on another level that Purim comes before Pesach, as we're experiencing now. We traveled through Purim, and now we're on the way to entering into the journey through Pesach. And in that sense, Purim sounds maybe as a preparation for Pesach. Now, that's explicitly, as many of you know this, that's exactly what the Gemara concludes. It seems like that's the conclusion of the Gemara Masechet Megillah in the first perek, when it discusses Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni B'Shana Mu'uberet, like this year. When do you do the Dalet Parshiyot? And as a result, when do you do all the halachos of Purim? There's a whole long sugya, but the Gemara more or less concludes the Kacha Nifsak Lalacha. That's the way we do it today, and that is we do it on Adar Sheni. And what's the logic behind it? The logic behind it is presented there in the Gemara with a Tanaic opinion that Mismach Geula LeGeula Adif. There is an advantage, or there is importance to binding together and to create like a time juxtaposition between Geula and Geula, and as Rashi there points out, Geulat Purim and Geulat Pesach. Therefore, we don't want to do Purim on Adar Rishon. We don't want the gap of Adar Sheni. We want to create a smichut moadim, similar to the concept of smichut parshiyot b'Torah. We want smichut moadim of Purim to Pesach, or mismach, as the lashon of the Gemara, mismach geula legeula. So anybody who's somewhat of a mitbonen understands that the depth behind that concept is that the geulot of Purim and Pesach are one leads to the other, and one prepares for the other, and one, which is the second one, cannot come into the world annually before the other, which is the first that led to it and gave birth to it. So then what's the understanding of it? So does Purim come first, or does Pesach come first? How do we look at it? So one way to possibly approach it is, as we many of us know, the Gemara says, brings a brayta Masechet Rosh Hashanah in the first perek. And that is the machloket Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua about the two edges of the year, the two cornerstones of the year, Tishrei and Nisan. Nisan as Rosh Chodeshim, as we just mentioned, as we all know, and Tishrei as the time of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, these are two Rashim, which are 6 months apart from each other, exactly two opposite ends of the spectrum of the year, of our annual system of time. So there's a whole bunch of machlokot there between Reb Lezer and Reb Yeshua, where Reb Lezer says, Be Tishrei Nivra Ha'olam, and the Rabbi Yeshua holds, Benisan Nivra Olam. B'sedah, there's a Tosfot later on towards the end of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, famous Tosfot, that applies the principle of the Gemara in Erevim, Daf Yud Gimel, of Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim, and applies that to that Machloket, in terms of Machloket Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua, that they're both true. The world comes into existence in thought, Ala B'machshava, and Tishrei, but it comes into fruition B'maaseh, in Nisan. That's a big and profound discussion, but not for now. But in any case, in the context of that Braita and the opinions and the Machloket there of Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Yeshua, which, as I said, there's a lot that lies behind it, but one of the things that they claim, that they agree upon, is B'nisan Nigalu, B'nisan Atidim Lehigael, that Nisan is Chodesh Geula, and that's the way it's referred to in our sources, in earlier sources, in Chazal, and later sources, in Rishonim and Achronim. Chodesh Nisan is a Chodesh Geula. I think, you know, it's pretty clear to us. But what does it mean it's Chodesh Geula? It's always Chodesh Geula. Coming to Leila Seder and coming to Pesach means I'm entering into Geula now, this year, whatever situation historically, as a people or as an individual, I'm in. Hence, of course, you find that echoed through Megillat Haggadah Shel Pesach. B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo kilu hu yatzah mimitzrayim. Geula is happening every single year, again and again and again. But מה שכתוב שם בניסן נגאלו, בניסן העתידין נגאל. Not only is Nisan חודש הגאולה in terms of the historical appearance of that גאולה, not only internally, but historically it appears and it happens back in the past in Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim, but also it's חודש הגאולה in a way that will manifest itself in the future. בגאולה עתידה בעזרת השם במהרה בימינו, then also בניסן עתידים להיגאל. Now the truth of the matter is, I think anybody who has a profound thinking mind, when he approaches Haggadah Shel Pesach, often, whether it's during the time of preparation for Pesach or actually during the Haggadah experience itself at Leil HaSeder, I'm sure many of you have had this quandary, and that is you're never sure as you're going through Leil HaSeder and the Haggadah whether the focus is really the Geula that was, Geulat Mitzrayim, Kepshuto, or are we busy here trying to latch into or tap into a Geula Atida? Or is it the Geula of me personally and my family and or Klal Yisrael today in our times now? As we said, B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo kilu yatzah mimitzrayim. And this quandary is legitimate, because the truth is they're all, not only both, but all three of them are true. And the secret behind it is really going to be the topic of our discussion, because what's revealed, as we will see soon, over the course of the night of Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim, and all of Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim is the birth of and the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a name that was not known prior to Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim and gets to be re-revealed every single year on Pesach. That is Shem Havaya, Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which all other names are, as the Mekubalim point out, branches of. And therefore, and if we keep in mind the meaning of Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, as is brought down by Shulchan Aruch, the basic Kavanah, Shem Havaya Yud Kei Vav Kei, is Haya, Hove, Vihye. So if Haya, Hove, Vihye is revealing itself at Geulat Mitzrayim, at Leil HaSeder, and that's really the underlying secret of the night and the entire Moed, so then we should expect there to be appearances of Geula, of Haya, Geula, of Hoveh, and Geula, of Yihyeh, in a way that they all somehow seem to merge into each other, intertwine with each other, in a way that we're never actually 100% sure were at different points in the process of Leil HaSeder, the 15th Simanim, where are we mainly focused on? So, in any case, once we take into account all these sources which we mentioned, and mainly the Gemara Megillah of Mismach Geula LeGeula Adif, and that's the conclusion that Adar Sheni is chosen because Purim needs to lead and to prepare and give birth to Pesach. So, as we suggested, maybe one can claim the following, and that is, and Benisan Nigalu indeed comes before Purim, but Purim does come before Benisan Atidim Lehigael, meaning that aspect of Nisan that was manifested already back in the actual Yetziat Mitzrayim, that leads to historically much later development in history of the Jewish people. That is the story of Purim and the story of Megillat Esther. But Nisan Atidim Ligel, that aspect of Nisan, which is where we're trying to tap into not what was, but we're trying to tap into what will be, which in itself is extremely intellectually thought-provoking. People usually relate to Moedim as celebrating what was. The actual English word that people use, maybe they should not use. And I try personally not to use celebrate, but it's a borrowed term from another language. Who said that it's at all has any validity in Lashon HaKodesh or in Lashon HaKodesh or in biblical Kodesh thinking? But celebrate, it always has to do, that's the way we interpret it, celebrating, I think, things that happened in the past, which the annual cycle of time, Jewish or Lahavdil Goyish, bring us back to, right? People, celebrate their anniversary. People celebrate their birthday, whether it's sourced in our sources, not sourced in our sources. It's a whole interesting and fascinating discussion. But in any case, and so too people relate to Moedim, and on one level, definitely true. Trying to tap back into the events of Chanukah, tap back into the events of Purim, tap back into the events of Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's a lot of the avodah of Leil HaSeder, especially giving over to the children or to the child within me to resurface and bring into present existence the actual Yetziat Mitzrayim, the original one. So, in any case, here we're talking about celebrating, and again, I'm going to drop the word, is trying to tap into and bond with or understand or connect to or create events of the future, not of the past. That in itself is a fascinating point to think about and challenging. And that gives us a lot of context of thought for coming into Leil HaSeder and coming into Pesach to celebrate the future. I'm not sure other religions do anything of that sort. And I highly recommend to try to reflect upon the concept to celebrate the future. It can only happen in a mind, and that's in a Jewish mind, that for them. And that's really the secret of it. The future is just a question of when it will actually happen, but it's a reality which has not yet unfolded. Meaning, God's promise, God's guarantee to redeem us at the end of days, as it was hovering over all the misery of Galut Mitzrayim. There is an ongoing Brit Ben HaBetarim and a promise to Avraham Avinu that was hovering over it, waiting to come into fruition, which the psukim, which we'll see in a moment in Sefer Shemot, Parsha Vayera, which introduces Yetziat Mitzrayim process of Aseret HaMakot, is all about God coming forth through the Ten Makot and Geulat Mitzrayim as He who fulfills promises, and that means He who is faithful and trustworthy in a way that God promise means. I promise something to you, which means I'm planting something for you in the future, which if our emunah and bitachon b'Hashem is proper, that means that's a reality. It's not a possibility. And we don't relate to it with hesitation, but rather with clarity. It's just a matter of how and when it will unfold, but we have certainty about the unfolding to the extent that I can actually celebrate it or draw from it. And receive life from that which Olam Hazeh-wise did not yet get to see its appearance. Anyways, this last point I'm actually saying in brackets, and I didn't think of actually, you know, talking about it too much. But in any case, going back to our topic of discussion, so one can talk about Pesach coming first and leading to Purim, or one can talk about on another level, Purim leading to, preparing for, and giving birth to Pesach that follows. Okay, so now let's take everything into another level. Let's examine together an interesting motif or theme that, interestingly enough, both Purim and Pesach completely share in common, in a way that I must say I only picked up on it in the last few weeks. I was aware of each one separately, but I never linked the two together. Now that we see how much Purim and Pesach are so deeply linked into each other, Mismach Geula LeGeula, let's see how they share the same peak point by both. What do I mean? Let's go in order, in this order. Purim as in leading to Pesach. So if you have a Gemara Megillah in front of you, please open up inside. Always better to see it inside. It's a Gemara that we made reference to, I think also in the Purim Shir on Zoom, for those who were there, or those who listened to the Shir. Masechet Megillah, Daf Tet Zayin, Amud Bet, Ani Kore Bifnim. Three lines into the wide lines. Omeret HaGemara, very famous Gemara, based on the Pasuk of Megillat Esther. The Pasuk that I want to emphasize fully brings out everything that Klal Yisrael has become, have become, and evolved and developed into as a result of Purim, which means prior to Purim, Klal Yisrael were not yet there. Obviously, linking to the Gemara Masechet Shabbat Daf Pei Chet, the famous Gemara of Matan Torah being forced upon Klal Yisrael, Kafa Aleihem Har Kegigit, versus Hadur Kiblua B'Yimei HaShverosh, something shifts and switches in Klal Yisrael's consciousness towards Torah, towards Kabbalah Torah and Mitzvot, as Rashi there points out, Me'ahavat HaNes of Purim, something shifts, and we switch from Kabbalat Torah B'Kfiyah to Kabbalat Torah Miratzon. And this, clearly, this Gemara Megillah communicates with that Gemara Masechet Shabbat, it seems. And it's talking about what are those aspects that Klal Yisrael accomplished and what changes they actually went through as a result. La'Yehudim Hayta Ora, B'Simcha V'Sason V'Yikar. Amar Rav Yehuda, each of these terms is referring to another realm in Torah. Ora zu Torah. And v'chenu omer, kiner mitzvah v'torah. Simcha zi yom tov. We don't have time to elaborate on each one over here. V'chenu omer v'samachta b'chagecha. Sason zu mila. As we know from a few places. V'chenu omer, sasa anochi alimratecha. Kemotze shalal rav. And then finally, and this is the peak of what Klal Yisrael accomplishes, and that's what I meant before, the peak of Purim. The peak, the end, the closing development and evolving into the Klal Yisrael reaches V'yekar Elu Tfilin. V'chenu Omer, what is it about Yakar, which is referring to Tfilin? And let me point out, I've pointed that out also on the Shabbaton for those of you who were there, that Yakar is a term which is very yakar. It appears actually 10 times in Megillat, I counted. It actually appears exactly 10 times in Megillat Esther. It's a rare, relatively rare term in Tanakh, but in Megillat Esther it appears 10 times from the beginning and all the way to the end. I'm not going to elaborate with examples right now. A lot to think about what yakar actually means. In what context, because its appearances in Megillat Esther are not always the same thing, but seemingly. However, here the Gemara darshins that the V'yakar that Klal Yisrael reaches is based on the Pasuk in Sefer Devarim. V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz ki shem Hashem nikra alecha, and when the nations of the world will see that the name of God is named upon you, called upon you, shem Hashem nikra alecha with an aleph, V'yaru mimeka, and they will be in awe of you, they'll fear you. V'tanya, Rabbi Elazar HaGadol omer, Elu tefillin shebarosh. This Gemara appears a few times in Shas, in Brachot, and in Menachot, and other places. In any case, Elu tefillin shebarosh. Yakar is referring to tefillin shebarosh. So I'll point out a deep point I once heard from Mori Rabbi from Rav Katz Shlita, and I always quote this about this Gemara over here. The question is, I mean, these mitzvot Klal Yisrael clearly received prior to Purim, and more so, if these are the mitzvot that they are somehow reattaining, so why are you bringing them out in such a strange way? I should have said, La'yudim ata Torah v'simcha v'mila v'tfilin. Why give these other terms? So Rav Katz explained many years, I heard this from him, that this is referring to the inner world of each one of those respective mitzvot. Ora became, Klal Yisrael got to know Torah as Ora. Klal Yisrael, as a result of the Purim story, reached a stage where they are able to tap into the Simcha of Yom Tov, into the Sason of Mila, into the Yakar of Tefillin. These inner worlds of these mitzvot, somehow new realms were discovered there. It seems that Klal Yisrael did not yet reach up to this historical stage, which obviously, if this is true, then each one is a very big discussion. What is it about this historical evolving and development that, but our topic right now specifically is tefillin. And the Yakar is referring to specifically to tefillin shebarosh, which are the revealed part of the tefillin, which even the goyim could see. And that will bring them to some awareness of that the name of God rests upon us, or is called upon us, Nikra Alecha V'yaru Mimeka. Okay? So this Gemara Masechet Megillah presents mitzvah tefillin, tefillin shebarosh, tefillin as the peak, the top of, it's on the top of the head, so to speak, of Purim. But if you open up your Chumash, or your Tanakh, please do, if you have one in front of you, at the end of Parshat Bo, the Parsha, which is the Parsha of this coming Friday night, Leila Seder, Parshat Yetziat Mitzrayim, which is going to be revolving around this Parsha, because Parshat Bishalach is already moving out already to Shvi Shel Pesach in Kiryat Yamsuf, but Rishon Shel Pesach is Parshat Bo. And if you open up together with me, you'll see, or you'll remember, maybe you remember this even by heart, that the two closing, and I'll add another word, peak, Parshiyot of Parshat Bo, the two last peak sections in Parshat Bo, are two Parshiyot, which we're familiar with. Parshat Kadesh li kol bechor peter kol rechem, that's in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Aleph, for those looking inside. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Kadesh li kol bechor peter kol rechem bivnei Yisrael. And the next Parsha is Perek Yud Gimel, skip with me together to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vehaya ki viacha Hashem el Eretz Kna'ani. Now, why are we familiar with Kadesh Li and Vayaki Ve'acha? Because these are the two out of the four Parshiot in our tefillin, together with Shema Vayayim Shema, which are already, later on, they appear in Sefer Devarim. Two in Devarim, two in Shemot, one consecutive Parshiot at the end of Parshat Bo. How do we know that we're supposed to put them in our tefillin? Because it explicitly says, though, inside these two Parshiot, as it does in Shema Vayayim Shema, in Kadesh Li Kol Bechor, if you skip down together with me to Pasuk Chet, V'igata lebincha b'yom ahu lemor ba'avur ze Hashem li b'tzeiti mimitzrayim. Speaking about remembering, we don't have time to read all the psukim inside, of remembering zechorot ha'yom hazeh asher yetzatim mimitzrayim, and how it should be expressed, this remembrance. But one of the ways of this remembrance is V'igata lebincha, which is clearly referring to, and that's one of the Arab Banim referring to the mitzvah of Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim, primarily to the Banim on the night of Tetvav, as it's brought down also in the Poskim. And then V'igata lebincha b'yom ahu lemor b'avur ze asa Hashem li b'tzeiti mimitzrayim v'haya lecha le'ot al yadcha ulezikaron bein einecha leman tiyeh Torat Hashem b'ficha. כי ביד חזקה הוציאך השם ממצרים, ושמרת את החוקה הזאת למועדה מימים ימימה. So this parsha clearly, from the psukim themselves, the parsha itself says, put me in tefillin. And so it is the same with V'haya kevi'acha. That if you go the parsha here, which again sums up Yitziat Mitzrayim, with pasuk dal yudalet vayaki shalcha bincha lemechar lemo mazot of the tam of the four arba banim. It finishes off this piece also, closing pasuk in parshat bo, the peak of parshat bo, the peak of parashat Yitziat Mitzrayim ve'ale ot al yadcha uletotafot beinei necha ki bechozek yad otziyanu Hashem mitzrayim. What happens here is that both the peak, the pinnacle of Purim and the pinnacle of Pesach are both manifesting themselves in tefillin, in Manyan. Okay, we'll see, we'll try to suggest some content in a moment. Notice though the difference between the way Kadesh Likod Bechol positions it on our head, and the way Vayaki V'yacha, the first one, which is Kadesh Likod Becho, is talking about Ulizikaron Ben Enecha, as a remembrance between your eyes, it should be. By the way, I think it's the Ramban, maybe it was somewhere else, I think the Ramban that points out that we don't put it, of course, as we know, as opposed to the Tzedukim, we don't put it between our eyes, between our eyes above on our head, between our eyes. But that's, I think I saw one of the Rishonim last week points out that that is between Shol Sheha Einayim, the roots of the eyes, which Dafka today, or with our knowledge of physiology today, it's very interesting because we know that the visual centers that are responsible in our brain for being able to actually to see, what the eyes only bring in the information, but the actual sight itself happens in the roots of the eyes, so to speak, b'shol she'a inayim, and where the tefillin is just in between those two parts. In any case, that's not the point. The point I'm trying to point out is that in Parshat Vayaki V'yacha, we use another term for tefillin shel rosh, ve'aleot al yadcha uletotafot b'inei necha. Totafot. Okay, the Gemara darshens this totafot. It's not. It's a very rare, almost not appearing word in the entire Tanakh. It's not so clear what it actually means. The Ramban suggests, I think I may have mentioned it on the Shabbaton, but the Ramban suggests a fascinating explanation that totafot may come from the word tiftuf, letaftef, a drip. Somehow, the consciousness that tefillin is meant to produce is supposed to drip into me as an ongoing, I'm suggesting already, but that's already my addition, or like an ongoing drip. And I'm pointing this out in the context of what we're going to be talking about, because if both Purim and Pesach leave us off on the note of tefillin, and tefillin shel rosh specifically, and tefillin shel rosh, according to the Ramban, is supposed to be producing some thought or stream of consciousness which is supposed to drip into me, as I say, some kind of a mental infusion that's constantly dripping in, it's very, very, very significant and very important and fundamental to try to tap into at least some aspects of what that consciousness really is meant to be. So let's try to delve into it. So which name is the Gemara referring to in Megillah and other appearances in Shas, where it says, "V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz ki shem Hashem nikra alecha v'yaru mimecha"? Which Shem, which name of God appears on us? So Rashi points out in those different appearances in Shas that Shem Hashem, as we all know, we have a name of God which is engraved on the actual tefillin, at least part of it is engraved on, part of it is tied in, so to speak, in the ties of the tefillin. But that's one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is Shem Shakai. It's one of the Shemot HaKodesh. Shem Shin Dalet Yud. Shem Shakai, something that appears as, and always appears as Kel Shakai. It's a specific name, a specific Mida of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that reveals itself in that name. And we know that the Shin is engraved into the actual shape of Tefillin Shel Rosh. And we have a Dalid and a Yud, both at the back of our head, and then the Yud and the Tefillin Shel Yad. But that, of course, suggests, and that's why some of the Rishonim don't accept Rashi's approach, because it's not the entire name of God. It's only two letters of the name of God on Tefillin Shel Rosh, and the third is on Tefillin Shel Yad. So I think Tosfot explains Rashi that is Rov, the majority of the letters that make up Shem Shakai appear on Tefillin Shel Rosh. Other opinions, such as the Maharal and other Rishonim, they hold differently. And they hold that Shem Hashem Nikra Lecha Stam Shem Hashem. Shem Hashem is the Shem Hashem, which we're referring to earlier. And that is Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. And Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is what hovers over us when we put on Tefillin Shel Rosh. V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz ki Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha V'yaru Mimeka. That means Yud Kei Vav Kei, hovering over or connected to me, above my head, between my eyes, above my head. Now that already starts reminding us a little of the Yud Kei Vav Kei that appears on the top of the head of, or on the actual Metzach, Aharon, a Kohen with a tzitz. And even more so, it brings to mind the very beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, in Or HaChaim, in Siman Aleph, Seif Aleph, the opening famous words of the Rama that we often make reference to, that defines basic primary Jewish consciousness. Shiviti Hashem, Shiviti Yud Kei Vav Kei Lenegdi Tamid, where he continues after quoting this pasuk from David HaMelech and Tehillim, and he goes on to quote the words of the Rambam and the Mor Nevuchim, how different one's life is and how one's quality of one's life changes to the better when one lives and his mind is in, that he is in front of a king versus living a life when he's not in front of the king. And so it is with the Melech Basav Adam, Al Achad Kama Vakama, Melech Malchei HaMelechim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's above me and watches my actions. It completely changes the quality of the way I conduct my life. How much internal work of consciousness this takes, we all know. And many people don't even attempt to go there because it seems to them too mentally challenging. It is challenging. But like with anything else, which is challenging in life, it's a matter of how much I train myself. The more I train, the better I become, just like with an instrument. In any case, so the four batim of Tefillin Shel Rosh, we know Tefillin Shel Rosh is made up of arba'a batim. Each one contains one of the four parshiyot. According to these Rishonim, it corresponds to Shem, the four letters of Shem Havaya, Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. Now, Shiviti Yud Kei Vav Kei LeNegdi Tamid, if I'm linking it to Tefillin, how does it remain with me? The Pasuk demands for it to be always with me. Shiviti Hashem LeNegdi Tamid. When I take off the Tefillin Shel Rosh when I finish Shachris, for the rest of the day. That's true. But in the same way, and I mentioned this also on the Zoom shiur, in the same way that I recently saw the famous line from the Gemara, I think it's the Gemara Masechet Berachot, Ulevai v'yitpalel adam kol hayom kulo, halevai, and a person would daven all day, is explained in, by one of the, I think one of Admorei Chabad, explains it in a sense that halevai, that one should be continue and stretching out the davening consciousness with which he had in Shachris over the course of the entirety of the day. And in that sense, ulevai v'yitpalel adam kol hayom kulo, meaning that the tefillah continues with a person, that the good Shachris that one had that morning continues registered in his mind, and he goes there with it the entire day. I think some, everybody here has had those times where you had a very good Shacharit, either during the week or on Shabbat or in special Moed, and then it continued going with him. It was registered in him. What the Mekubalim call Roshim or Reshimu. Reshimu means an effect. It's registered in me. As the Moed is supposed to, the Reshimu of a Moed is supposed to remain in me. The Moed is meant to change me. The Zot Hashem, the Pesach, is going to change us to the better. And that change is meant to remain with me, meaning I really changed. So wherever I go, whenever I go, that change is still with me. So the Moed never goes. The Moed that I've accomplished and in a way that changed me always remains with me. So the Moed is never over. In any case, so I would apply that same type of thought to Tefillin. It's true, we're on a level that we do take our Tefillin off our head and our arm after Shacharit, but And it's just similar, ulevai v'yitpalel kol hayom, adam kol hayom kulo, ulevai v'atfilin yu iti kol hayom kulo, which is my ultimate recommendation for the ongoing, very common question, how to keep a proper mindset of a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in avodat Hashem, in kedusha, in shmirat enayim, in yirat shamayim, when one is in the midst of chol, and working, or sitting in an office in front of a computer, or studying. And as you all know, the most common challenge and question that appears always for people after they left yeshiva. And my recommendation recently is to never take off your tefillin. So I don't mean it literally, but I do mean it literally. I don't mean it literally means, I mean going to your office in Manhattan, to your law firm or accounting firm, with your tefillin on, but mentally, yes, that's what I mean. You never really take them off. It takes kavana at the end of shacharit, not to have your mind already outside of the shul, but as I take off the tefillin, I depart from you, I give you a kiss, like good Jews do. We kiss our tefillin, and that kiss means we never depart from each other, we remain with each other the entirety of the day. The way a good husband who treats his wife properly and cares for her, the way he says goodbye in the morning before he goes to work, in a way that then they're registered with each other for the rest of the day. Same thing also over here. It changes the quality of one's day when one remains with his tefillin on all day. Mentally, I'm talking about. Anyways, so according to these Rishonim, according to the Maharal and others, that Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha Tfilin Sheberosh is referring to Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei Shem Havaya, that remains above me, which I'm busy producing it every morning by putting on Tfilin Sheberosh, and hopefully remaining in that state of consciousness in a way that somewhere hovers above me and is registered in me even when I'm interacting with other people and working and learning whatever I might be doing during the day and the night that follows. But this state of Shem Havaya above me is the pinnacle of Purim, in the pinnacle of Pesach. And that's already very much Omer Darsheni. Like, well, like, how do we understand that? Like, what does that mean? So everybody, please open up your Chumashim again, but this time also in Sefer Shmot, but in Parsha Va'era. I said that we're going to get to it, now we're getting to it. The opening of Parsha Va'era, we've spoken about it last year or the year before. Talk about it on a level, first level, now in this part, and then hopefully next part, as I said, that we'll have. Either I'll send it out tomorrow, or during the Chag and Chol HaMoed, we'll relate to level 2. So you'll open up, please, your Chumashi 2, Perek Vav Pasuk Bet, I'm Sefer Shmot, beginning of Parsha Va'era. Parsha Va'era, as we all know, is the Parsha of the first 7 Makot of Aseret HaMakot, where the last 3 are, of course, in Parsha Bo, Begimatria, Shalosh, as I think the Baal Torim also points out. I'm starting the beginning of Parsha Va'era, the launching off of Yitziat Mitzrayim, which is a 10-stage process of Aseret HaMakot. Vayidaber Elokim el Moshe, vayomer elav, ani Hashem. What is that statement of Hashem to Moshe that launches off Yitziat Mitzrayim? I am Hashem. And to be more precise meaning to be more conscious and aware of which name of God are we using biblically, Ani Yudke Vavke. What kind of a statement is that? I am God. Okay, so one has to continue. As sometimes in the Gemara, the line doesn't make sense, so sometimes the solution is move on a little, and then things fall into place, and that's what happens here. Vayera el Avraham el Yitzchak vel Yaakov bekel Shakai. I showed myself to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov with a different name, Kel Shakai, which is the other name, according to the Rashi, which appears on our tefillin. Ushmi Hashem, lo nodati lahem, and the name Yud Kei Vav Kei of mine, They did not get to know me. And I'll just emphasize, which I always do. You may ask, Yudke Vavke appears in Sefer Bereshit. It appears already in Parashat Bereshit, way before Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And during those times, not always, but we definitely find Yudke Vavke appear, okay, more than that. Again and again in Sefer Bereshit. What it means is, but they didn't know him on that level, though he functioned from that level. However, I'm continuing. Pasuk Dalet. Vagama kimoti et briti itam, latet laim et eretz knan. My time has come to fulfill my covenant, my brit, my promise to give them eretz knan, and meaning brit ben abatarim. Et eretz megureim asher garu ba. Vagama nishamati et naakad bnei Yisrael asher Mitzrayim avidim otam beizkor et briti. Lachen emor livnei Yisrael. Again, ani yudkei vavkei. Clearly, this is the issue over here. Ani Hashem starts it off. Ani Hashem continues it again. I am Yudke Vavke, to phrase it as such. Yitziat Mitzrayim, for it to happen, necessitates a revelation of a new name of Hashem, the name of Hashem. I, with my, the name of mine, I'm appearing through Yitziat Mitzrayim. Yitziat Mitzrayim is the appearing of me, which its next stage, of course, is going to be where I fully introduce myself to my people at Matan Torah. Anochi Yudke Vavke Elokecha Asher Hoceiticha Meretz Mitzrayim Mibeit Avadim. But the beginning of my appearance as Yudke Vavke is in the actual night of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And then that immediately leads to the four Lashanot of Geula, which are the framework of the Seder night, v'hotzeiti etchem mitachat tzvilot Mitzrayim v'yitzalti, and I'm skipping to pasuk zayin v'lakachti, pasuk chet v'heveiti. So these are the leshonot ha-geula, which means this is the geula plan, this is the geula process, these are the geula stages. I wonder if arba leshonot ha-geula sources talk about, I wonder if they do, I don't recall something inside, but I won't be surprised if that's the case, that these four Lashonot HaGeula have to do or correspond or parallel the four letters of Yudke Vavke. Because again, Gulat Mitzrayim is about the revelation of this name. Or to phrase it a touch differently, Yudke Vavke needs to be revealed for Yitziat Mitzrayim to actually happen, take place. So, Ma Ra'inu Mipo, Yitziat Mitzrayim, Geulatam Shel Yisrael, and the revelation of Shem Yudke Vavke, or Yudke Vavke hovering above me, means I'm in a state of Geula, expressed in Purim, expressed in Pesach. Or if you wish, expressed in Pesach and expressed in Purim. And then this is our topic. Everything till now is an introduction. In what way Yudke Vavke being above me, on my head, in my head, why am I switching to in my head? Because that's the Lashon of the Gemara. Elu tfilin shebarosh, not tfilin alarosh. Sources make reference to this. I think tfilin shebarosh. Okay, so tfilin in my head, yudke vavke in my head, yudke vavke on my head, is a state of geula. What does that mean? Again, Geulat Pesach and Geulat Purim indeed show us that their peak is in the revelation of Yudkei Vavkei on our head. So this fits completely with the fact that the very introducing of the upcoming Yitzhak Mitzrayim and the opening of Parsha Ve'era that launches off the process that gives birth to Yitzhak Mitzrayim and birth to the Jewish people is the revelation of Yudkei Vavkei. So all these pieces fit beautifully together. Now let's try to understand. What does it mean? In what way does Yudkei Vavkei specifically produce Geula? Or, to phrase it a little differently, we refer to Pesach as Chag Geula, or Nisan as Chodesh Geula, and yet Chazal gave us, and Anshei Knesset HaGedolah coined for us another almost identical, parallel term to define in our tefillot, in our brachot, Pesach specifically, as we say in Yavale V'Yavo, in Birkat Hayom, Kedushat Hayom, in Tefillah, and that is that we refer to and we define the essence of the day, Kedushat Hayom of Pesach, has a few names. Pesach has a few names. Pesach and Chag HaMatzot, that I'm referring specifically to the Lashon of Anse Knesset HaGdol, and that is Zman Cheruteinu. Okay, so Cherut and Geula obviously are very closely related. It's not the same word. One would have to define each one separately. One definitely is related and deeply intertwined with the other. But putting all these pieces together, we're asking now, what is it about living through or having a drip of Totafot, of Yudke Vavke, into my consciousness, into my system, specifically that makes me a Ben Chorin, that makes me a person of Geula, both on a Purim level and on a Pesach level? That's what we're trying to understand. As I said, I'd like to, we'll talk now for the next few minutes on level number one, and Bezalel Hashem, next part will be level number two. Okay? Level number one of what does it mean to be Ben Chorin and to reach Cherut and Zman Cheruteinu and Geula and to come out of Me'avdut LeCherut and from Choshech Le'or and from Evel Yom Tov and all the beautiful Lashonot of the shift that takes place over the course of the Seder night. Matchil Begnut U'Mesayim B'Shvach, as the Gemara in Masechet Pesachim defines for us. And in the Mishnah, Machloket Rav and Shmuel, where exactly in the Haggadah do we find the expression of Matchil Begnut U'Mesayim B'Shvach? We're not going to elaborate right now too much on the depth behind it and the secret behind it, and why is it that we need to go from, if you wish, Avdut Lecherut historically, and from darkness to night annually, because that's what the prime Leila Seder is about. It means the Seder night is about moving from darkness to light, as we say in the actual Lashon of the Haggadah. Why do we have to come from Gnut to Shvach? That's a lot to talk about, and that's one of the main deep points that the whole Seder night is supposed to bring us to, that understanding and that, and the living of that understanding. But for our topic, and I want to drift into that right now, how does Yudkei Vavkei, my awareness of Yudkei Vavkei, and living, having it as in my head, as a high place within myself that hovers over me or is in a high place in me, which I draw my consciousness from and I live under or with, hence Shiviti Yudkei Vavkei LeNegdi Tamid. In what way does this produce Cherut? How does it transform me into a free person? What slavery does it take me out of? Okay. So, for that, I open up, please, the Gemara Masechet Pesachim on Daf Nun. And it's a Gemara, famous Gemara. I make reference to, I use this Gemara a lot. Many of you listening now heard this, I've spoken about this in the past. It's a Gemara, if you have a Gemara in front of you, we're not going to do the whole thing inside, we're just going to draw out one line or two, it's getting late. And Daf Nun Amud Aleph, the end of Perik Elu Ovrin, the last 10-12 lines, V'haya Hashem L'melech al kol ha'aretz, the Gemara quotes the famous pasuk that we all know from Zechariah, V'haya Hashem L'melech al kol ha'aretz b'yom ahu yehi Hashem echad u'shmo echad. So the Gemara goes and examines two parts here. In the end of days, b'yom ahu, as we all know, b'yom ahu, the end of days, Yeshem echad u'shmo echad, that's the peak point of our tefillah, of Aleinu L'Shabeach. It's referring to the end of days, and the consciousness of the end of days, that where Hashem will be one and His name will be one. So then the Gemara immediately asks, what, now He's not one and His name is not one? So on that, let's refer, we don't have time to see the whole piece, but just to relate to the piece which is relevant to us, and that is u'shmo echad, skip 3-4 lines down. We'll get to the line that begins, Ushmo Echad. Ushmo Echad. Ma Echad. Atu Aidna. Lav Shmo Echadu. God's name is not one just because of the world now. In what way is God's name not in a state of oneness. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, lo ka olam hazeh, ha olam haba. Ha olam hazeh nichtav biyud hei, v'nikra ba'alef dalet. Aval ha olam haba, kulo echad, nikra biyud hei, v'nichtav biyud hei. What Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is telling us, that in olam hazeh and olam haba, we don't relate to Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is the name, Shmo, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the same way. La'atid lavo, we have written in front of us in our Sefer Torah, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and we pronounce it and articulate it as such. We read it as it's written, Yud Kei Vav Kei. But in our times, what we call Olam Hazeh, throughout history, I'm not able to express Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yud Kei Vav Kei cannot be expressed on my lips, and instead I use a different name, Shem Adnut, which can be expressed on my lips. And that's what the Gemara goes on and elaborates and says, Lo kesha'ani nichtav ani nikra. That's the closing of this parak. Nichtav ani ba'yud kei v'nikra ani ba'alef dalet. And that means that there's this built-in discrepancy in Olam Hazeh between God's appearance on the actual Torah scroll and text, where Yud Kei Vav Kei is actually written by the Sofer on a Sefer Torah. It's in front of my eyes, and I look at it and I read something else. I read Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Somehow, it's almost like I do injustice. I have to do injustice to the text. A name of God is written, which I cannot and I do not halachically read. I read Aleph Dalet. The source is here in the Gemara Masechet Pesachim. What does this mean? We've talked a lot about this over the years. It clearly means that Yudkei Vavkei is where I meet, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on a level where I cannot comprehend, and therefore I cannot express. This is where I meet God, or I get to know God on a level that I know that He's above and beyond me, infinite and abstract and mysterious and beyond anything that my conscious, logical, intellectual mind can comprehend. Kamo shekatuv bazohar, leit machshava tfisa beiklal. Leit machshava tfisa beiklal. Our human thinking cannot comprehend the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But the point is, it's written in front of me, but I cannot pronounce it, which means I fully perceive the fact that I cannot perceive God. We've said this many, many times over the years in many different shurim and yeshiva. And the reason why we repeat this over and over and over again, because this is basic Jewish emunah. If one lacks this, one is lacking the most fundamental piece of his emunah, which is God is above and beyond. God is not another human being. He's not a friend. He also can, if I allow him, he becomes very close. Such as Karov Hashem lechol korav lechol asher yikra'uhu ve'emet. But at the same time, as close as he can become, and as down the ladder, so to speak, between the two worlds of Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, does he come down to participate in our lives? Bechol koreinu olav mika Hashem Elokeinu. Bechol koreinu olav, as it says in Parshat Vayetchanan, if I'm not mistaken. So, at the same time, he is far and beyond the reach of anything that human beings can comprehend, and any other concept, therefore, of God in any other religion, of course. And therefore, and that expresses itself in my inability, my halachic inability to express this name, means God is beyond expression. And I fully comprehend that I cannot comprehend. And I learn to be fully okay with it. And that means I'm living with the awareness of something much bigger hovering above me called Yud Kei Vav Kei. Okay? Now, having all this background in mind, now let's go back to our question. We saw from all the sources that we pieced together that by the extent that I live with Yud Kei Vav Kei above me, to that extent I become a person of Geula, in a true Ben Chorin, who can indeed experience Zman Cheruteinu. In what way does Yud Kei Vav Kei set me free? I'm talking on a level that meets us in our lives today. How does Yud Kei Vav Kei in my head, change my life in a way that forms me and transforms me into a real, true Ben Chorin? Notice I'm not using the term free. Ben Chorin, Zman Cheruteinu. How does Yudke Vavke produce that? How do me being conscious of Yudke Vavke, having Yudke Vavke registered in my mind all day as a result of my tefillin, how does it produce me, a free person? Free of what? So, we're already talking for an hour, so we'll do this quickly. Level number one will be as such. And we'll leave level number two, as I said, for next time. Level number one, comes out as such. Yudke Vavke means that that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not just bigger than my consciousness, but he's bigger than the world. That's where God precedes the world, precedes the world that he created, and by the very fact that he precedes on that level the world that he created, that means that he is unlimited by the world that he created, or, to use another term, he is free. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Ben Chorin in relationship to the world that he made, because he existed prior to it, and therefore he's beyond it, outside of it, and unlimited, and not enslaved by the world that he made, by the very fact that he is higher, prior, and bigger than that world, and beyond that world. So Yudke Vavke means HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself as unlimited and as a Ben Chorin to the world. To the extent that I draw from that place, I draw from a place that I'm free from the world and I am unlimited by the world. Not because of me, I don't have that might, but I draw my life from he who does have that and he is beyond it. So where do I draw my existence and my life from? In fact, according to the Mekubalim, Klal Yisrael, in fact, draws its existence from this name of God, Yudke Vavke, as opposed to Umot HaOlam that draw their name from Shem Elokim. Bereshit, hence, Bereshit Bara Elokim et HaShemayim et HaAretz, the entire Bria. But Klal Yisrael draws from a higher place, which is beyond the Bria, which is Yudke Vavke. Where does it express itself? It expresses itself in the link that we always mention, that the Tur brings down, that Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot are keneged Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, which means Pesach is keneged Avram Avinu. And that's exactly what Avram Avinu then is about. Avram Avinu's recognition, Avram Avinu's discovery, Avram Avinu's discovery of monotheism is that, in contrasting background to paganism, that the source of the world is beyond the world and unlimited and free from the world. And the moment that he reached that clarity and draws his existence from that place and taps into that place, it set Avram Avinu free from any subjugation or enslavement or she'abud to society around him, where whatever their thoughts may have been and their notions and their worldviews and their gods, from his perspective, became nonsense because he reached beyond this world, and therefore he reached the conclusion that clearly the source of the world cannot be contained, self-contained within the world. It logically does not make sense. And if it doesn't make sense to me, then, you know, that's all that counts. Again, Avraham Avinu reached the conclusion that the source of the world and the source of life and the source of his life is from beyond the world. And if that's where he aims his consciousness towards, the result is, this is the crux of it, listen carefully, it sets Avram Avinu free from any obligation or subjugation or enslavement to the world, to society. I want to try out to bring out this deep and subtle point. I think in a Zoom shiur I gave a mashal from, I remember many years ago when I was young and I used to do karate, they used to say, I think there, I heard this, that the healthiest posture, this, when you stand, is when you imagine the top of your head, like the really peak of your head, is connected to a string or a rope, to a source that's holding you up above, from beyond you. Now, if you stand as such, that if your mind is set is that my head is bound to a rope that's connected to a source above and beyond me. So then what it does to the muscles of the rest of my body, specifically my shoulders and my back, it sets everything loose and free. It's one of the very healthy ways to let go of tension over the course of my muscles of my bodies that for many people is stored in their muscle of their neck or of their shoulders or in the back. Try that out. You can do it right now as the if you're sitting down or standing, or after shiur, you'll see that if I imagine myself, my head connected above me, the outcome is that the muscles below are set free. So too also over here. To the extent that I, like my great-grandfather Avram Avinu, I draw from above what my source of life that drips into me from above me, is a high place within me, yet beyond me, and I draw my existence from there, and my life from there, and my consciousness from there. To that extent, that's all that I aim myself towards. I don't have to report to anybody other than he who is beyond me. If I don't have to report to anybody other than he who is beyond me, that sets me free from anybody around me, and I become free from society. I don't need approval from society, as Avraham Avinu did not need, and he set himself free from any approval of society. You don't accept my notion, too bad. Okay, I'm fine. I don't need you. I don't need a like from you. And I don't care about a dislike from you. It's irrelevant to me. You hear how different this is from our society today? How people's existence and their identity and their value of self-worth and self-confidence and self-importance is based on how many likes or dislikes they received, how many responses they receive, meaning that extent, that means that my identity and my confidence and my worth and value is dependent upon other people other than me. That means that I'm a slave to society. And one, we don't have the time now, and I don't know if there's actually a need to elaborate on it too much. We look to our right, and we look to our left, and we look front and our back. Mimini, umismoli, umilfanai, umachoai. In every single possible direction, we see us, that we're living in a society that's what's moving everything. Is this that energy of social approval that manifests itself in multiple different ways? But if we add the mi'imini, mi'smali, mi'lfanai, mi'achoai, the al-roshi shchinat kel, which means yudkei vavkei is hovering above and beyond, my kavana is aimed there. I don't have to give a din v'cheshbon to society. I don't need their approval. I don't need their disapproval. I mentioned it in the Shabbaton. Think about that. Somebody pointed this out. Rav Chaim Kanievsky Zatzal, a person who did not have Facebook and did not have Instagram and did not have any of these things, and he had millions of followers around the world. Everything about his being, and everything about the being of his friend, Yibadel HaChaim Morinu V'Rabbeinu Rav Nevenzahl Shlita, which that's an example which we're very familiar with from daily experience, day in, day out, day and night. You see, two people, one who's alive and one who's in Olam HaEmet, recently, painfully so, left us. These are people who approval of society is like, it doesn't even begin. It's like so irrelevant. I don't need it. I just like, give me my time to sit and learn. I don't need you to run after me. It doesn't do anything to me. I'm good internally. My life is meaningful. I have this deep sense of self-worth and content. Me and God are good. Me and my life, me and Torah are good. I can remain there. I'm fine. I relate to society. Nobody can blame Avraham Avinu. The first true Jew, the first one to reach these levels for not connecting to society, the person who sat in his tent and just waited for the opportunity for people to come his way, and when he reached a very high level of consciousness, he didn't remain in that meditative state of prophecy, of Ruach HaKodesh, where God came to visit him and said, God, I'm sorry, I'm busy connecting to society. I have guests to take care of. Omerot HaGemara, as you know in Shas, Gdola Achnasat Orchim Yoter Mikabalat Pnei Hashchina. That's Judaism. That's not Buddhism. We're Jews. We're not Buddhists. Achnasat Orchim, way above and beyond my internal state of spirituality that I can reach. So one cannot blame Avraham Avinu for not connecting to society. I connect to society, but I'm not bound by society. I relate, I love, I care, I'm sensitive to, I listen, I give. I don't need you, I want you. That's the secret of true relationship, true love, healthy love, which so many times you see people fail over the understanding of it and fail over the experience of it. We don't have to elaborate with examples right now. The difference between love and what really lemaisa is dependency, and dressed up in false garments as if love. In any case, this is level number one, and we'll sum this up for this evening. I live under or with, and with the awareness of Yudke Vavke, there's a greater reality that hovers above me, which is within me, Tfilin Sheb Barosh. And it goes with me all day. And to the extent that it does, more and more go with me, more and more of the day, to that extent, my aim, my kavanah, my consciousness is aimed at a place which is bigger than this world, beyond the world, unlimited by the world, unlimited by society. It sets my relationship with society free. I connect, but I don't have to connect. I want to connect. It's meaningful to connect. I want to give to people like God. I don't have to. Like God doesn't have to. God chose. I'm also choosing to connect. I'm a true Ben Chorin. My relationships are infused with freedom. My relationships are infused with Chirut. Whether it's Shalom Bayit, our children. Life is full of obligations, but obligations which are on the outside. The inside core of my obligations and my relationships in life are of choice and of freedom and of a healthy stream of consciousness that brings healthy life into every moment of our relationships. Beseder, my friends, Laila Tov. Hope you enjoy the preparations for Pesach. One can do it and enjoy, and one can do it and complain. Obviously, the first is the better. Highly recommend one can do it in a way that he enjoys it. You can listen to shirim, to music, to nigunim during that time. It's good thinking time to clean the windows and to clean the windows of your soul, to clean the corners of your room, clean the corners of your mind, of your heart, clean the drawers of your desk, and you clean the drawers of your neshama. And so on and so forth. And one can bring more cleanliness and more health and more humility into more and more corners of our life. Bezat Hashem, to bring about more and more chirut into every piece and corner of our life and our relationships. Bezat Hashem, next time that we meet here, I'll send out a recording either tomorrow or yet before Pesach, and if not, over the course of the Moed itself. It's not only about Leila Seder, it's the entirety of the stretch of Pesach. We'll go into level two, a whole other level of Shem Yudke Vavke, as it's brought down in interesting sources. There, hopefully, we'll see how not only does living under and with Yudke Vavke set me free from society, but it can actually also set me free on another level from myself. Toda Rabbah. Pesach Kasher V'Sameach, we don't get to meet again here before the Chag.